Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Daniel Foster of National Review Online, in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back tomorrow. Dan, it was almost a month ago, time really flies, that President Obama was standing before a joint session of Congress, trying to squeeze in his speech before the first NFL game of the season because, of course, his priorities were in order. And he talked about his jobs bill, and he kept saying, pass this bill, pass this bill, pass this bill. And I keep forgetting, when are we supposed to pass this bill, Dan?
Right now.
Right now is exactly right. So the president all going around the country blaming Congress for, why is this bill not back to my desk? So yesterday, listening, heeding the president's words, Mitch McConnell goes to the floor of the Republican Senate Minority Leader and says, look, I don't like this bill, but the president has a point. He's got this bill. We should vote on it. Here's McConnell making the pitch. And to some, the surprising response from Harry Reid, the Democratic Senate Majority Leader, to that request.
He's asked for a vote. And I think we ought to accommodate the President of the United States on a matter that he has been speaking about frequently over the last few weeks and give him his vote.
Right away is a relative term. That time will come very, very soon. So I object.
Oh, man. Apparently he and President Obama not on the same page here. Could it be, Dan, that 16 Senate Democrats are basically on the record as either not liking this bill and would actually vote against it, or would certainly like something different, most of whom are up for re-election next year, some in very difficult re-election battles, big surprise. This is basically Harry Reid's way of telling the president, we can't pass this thing, so you probably ought not to be pushing it so heavily right now. The only question is whether the media will actually point out the fact that it's not the Republicans who are obstructing this thing. It's the Senate Democrats.
Yeah, it's yet another initiative from this president about which the only thing that's bipartisan is the opposition. I think maybe the problem, you know, you have Senator Reid saying that right away is a relative term. I'm not so sure that it is, but maybe the problem is that President Obama didn't say let's be clear enough when he when he suggested that they pass the bill now. Yeah, it's come out today. There's a couple stories that what Reid and the Democrats are busy doing is changing the revenue mechanisms in the jobs bill, because you've got, you know, President Obama's plan to tax the quote-unquote rich, which, guess what, hits a lot of middle-class families in Democratic states in the Northeast, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and the like, that are represented by Democrats. And you've got these rinky-dink corporate jet tax hikes and oil, you know, cutting these oil subsidies that I think, you know, amount to paying for less than 1% of the jobs bill and incur the wrath of Democrats in oil states and in Boeing states. So, and not to mention Joe Manchin, who's a dino, I guess, who's saying that, you know, the price tag is ugly. So, yeah, this is going to be a big problem for the Democrats to get out of the Senate. What's interesting is that you can see the machinations in the White House. They're saying, we're not going piecemeal. We're not going compromise on this jobs bill. We're sick of doing that. It's election season. We're going to ram this thing down their throats and dare the Republicans not to pass it. So it was meant to be a showdown with the House, but their liaison to with the Senate Democrats must not have been doing his job, because we're going to get a showdown in the Senate too. It can only be bad for President Obama.
Yeah, shockingly, folks like Claire McCaskill, John Tester, Ben Nelson, Joe Manchin, all shying away from this thing. Even Bob Casey, who I'm not even sure has a top-flight Republican challenger in Pennsylvania, but he can read poll numbers as well as anybody else, and certainly the poll numbers of this president are lousy right now, and nobody wants to be attached to him, especially when they saw what happened in last year's midterm elections. But well done, Harry Reid, and well done, Nevada. Well done, as Jim would say, for once again torturing the English language and all common sense. But as you mentioned, Dan, you know, the rich are going to pay their fair share here. And no one's in the far left progressive community is willing to wait for Congress to do it anymore. They've occupied Wall Street for days now, and they say they'll even build igloos there if necessary until they get what they want. Now, ask them what they want, and that'll be kind of a muddled response. All they know is that they want the really rich people and the heads of corporations to not be rich, and I'm guessing they want that money to go to them or to their pet causes. Here's the laughable Michael Moore on a show apparently hosted by Keith Olbermann on some network nobody's heard of.
They're kleptomaniacs is what they are. They're out of control. I think it really is some kind of a sociopathic illness, and they now want us to live in a kleptocracy. We're the kleptomaniacs. run the show.
It's a mental illness to want to be able to keep your money, Dan. I find that a little bit interesting from a guy who's made millions of dollars and is now suing for more profits from his Fahrenheit 9/11 movie. So apparently the capitalist system works just fine for the guy who unfortunately wears a Michigan State hat. You know, this is just so unbelievably unnatural and just off the wall. Rich Lowry had a great piece on National Review yesterday. How about this is a pathetic attempt for the left to come up with their own version of the Tea Party. Nobody with two brain cells together is buying this thing, and it's just a huge chance for hippies and other people to get together and pretend like they're making a difference. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. I mean, as much as it's passé to use that word, I mean, that's exactly what I think of when I see these things, you know, downtown here in New York City. And I went to school in Washington, D.C. at kind of the height of the anti-WTO protests and the anti-World Trade protests and IMF and World Bank protests. You know, it's the same set of Trustafarians, white guys with dreadlocks who haven't taken a shower in better part of a week, and nuts and loons from a dozen different fringe movements. There's 9/11 truthers mixed in there fairly liberally. Some people who may be along the lines of what Michael Moore was suggesting, actually insane in some way. If you listen to the reporters that we've been sending down there the last week to talk with some of these people. But the way I put it on Twitter this morning actually was, and I think, you know, I really believe this, that if Occupy Wall Street were actually a sting operation conducted by Crossroads or some other big conservative PAC that was meant to catch, you know, pillars of the quote-unquote serious party in the act of indulging in these wacko fringe fantasies. We debate calling the President of the United States a socialist. These guys are explicitly socialist, and it's mixed with a kind of ill-thought-out anarchism. If the conservatives, if this were a vast right-wing conspiracy to catch people like Ezra Klein, who's embraced this thing on his blog and has a reputation for being a sober, rational, empirical, pragmatic, down-the-middle policy wonk, or Alex Perrine at Salon, who just wrote a piece today suggesting that Occupy Wall Street should call on the forgiveness of all household debt in the United States. All right, this is a mainstream pundit writing for a mainstream left of center publication. I mean, we couldn't have designed a better sting operation ourselves. I think Occupy Wall Street is tremendously useful because the quote unquote serious party is being kind of called back to their college days here, and they're taking the bongo drum out of the closet and dusting it off, and we're seeing them for what they really are.
And you point out, you know, the difference between them and the Tea Party, in case anyone actually does come close to being confused. You mentioned one critical factor before, and that's the Tea Party or shower. Secondly, the importance is that I think more people were arrested at this thing in the first 24 hours by exponential margins than any Tea Partiers have been arrested. And I'm guessing when this thing's over, there's going to be slightly more garbage on the streets of New York than whenever there's a Tea Party event.
Oh, I'll tell you just a quick anecdote. I went down anthropologically to the first March on Washington against the Iraq War in 2003 or 2004. I was in college. I went down to the mall, and in addition to the aftermath, as the masses had started marching towards the Navy Yard, and in addition to the fact that there were people selling March on Washington T-shirts, which I thought was hilarious, I actually, in a bit of life-imitating poetry, I actually stepped on a flyer amidst all the garbage strewn about the mall after they left and picked it off the bottom of my shoe, and it was a Greenpeace flyer. So I just thought that was, the irony there was so rich. I'm sure this is, you know, this is going to be much more eventful than any Tea Party rally. But you got to remember, it's just the man trying to keep them down.
One of the things the man has also done, unfortunately, in recent years is implement really bad policies that we've seen result in a record number of people under the poverty line, also a record number of people on food stamps. So hunger is a very real issue in this country for a lot of people, certainly a lot of kids, and that's tragic. Hopefully they're getting it at schools, but clearly, with the numbers that high, they're not necessarily doing that. So clearly, Dan, the way to solve all of this is to introduce a new Muppet on Sesame Street named Lily, who's dealing with hunger issues. It's going to be a primetime special. They've got some celebrities dealing with this, and the issue is legitimate. I'm just not sure why Muppets are considered the best way to deal with this, especially when one of the most famous ones of all has lived in a trash can for 45 years.
I think it is it's a righteous cause, and I think the Sesame Street special reading about this is being backed by private charities and Brad Paisley, who will be familiar with a lot of NRO readers, and his wife are affiliated with it. Part of me likes this. Unfortunately, with Sesame Street, you have the Corporation for Public Broadcasting tie-in and the public funding things that kind of sour people on it. But this is one of the things that I think President Bush got really right, and that's unfortunately, I think, maligned as quote-unquote compassionate conservatism, which is on the right become a with justice has become kind of a loaded term. But, you know, his emphasis on saying, look, if we don't want the government to expand the entitlement state and reach its hands into more aspects of society, well, we need strong private and religious institutions that are going to pick up the slack and make sure that we have functioning communities and people are helping each other out. So I actually don't have a problem with this this Muppet pointing to issues of childhood hunger, which I think is, you know, unfortunately still a real issue in the wealthiest country in the world. And I actually like the idea that this isn't some call to action for a federal bill that's going to make sure that Michelle Obama picks the breakfast options for you know, American children throughout the country. I like the fact that it's a clarion call for some private groups and some charities and for you know, ordinary Americans to be more aware of this issue and hopefully do something and contribute at the local level to alleviating it.
Yeah, President Bush certainly had the right idea in making sure that private charities and religious organizations were on the front lines of meeting the most immediate needs of their neighbors. That's definitely the way that it's supposed to be done. Helping these people get jobs would also probably go a long way as well. So it'd be very interesting to see what impact any of this has. And Dan, great having you with us the last several days. We'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure.
Daniel Foster of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim Garrity will be back on Thursday. Please join us then for the next Three Martini Lunch.